Welcome to Comic Talk Today for Tuesday, March 12th, 2019. Man, it's been a long time since I chatted over here. Woo! Hello, welcome. This week I'm going to be posting a few panels. I was at SC Comic Con here in Greenville, South Carolina over the weekend. I went to four different panels. I'm going to try to clean up the audio as best as I can. The easiest one to clean up was the one that I'll be posting today, and that'll be Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. I thought it was a really fun chat, and those guys were amazing. Snyder pitches like 7 books just on the spot. I thought that was incredible. And anyway, yeah, take a look, listen. It's about 45 minutes long. Of course, you can find me on Twitter, at GeekVine. You can email yell@comictalk.today. I'll be back tomorrow with something else. Thanks for listening. Catch you then.
I think this is the first one we ever got, right?
Yeah.
Standing up?
Yeah. I do not recall it, by the way.
Oh, this can go to guy's head.
Greg needs more going to his head, right?
What are you trying to say, man? I'm not talking about all that alcohol from last time, right?
This is my third panel with Greg, so hopefully I can joke around like that.
No, I'm going to beat your ass later.
Yeah. I will, too. Have you guys seen his guns? First question. It's something. All right, so how many of you guys were the VIP panel yesterday? Anybody? All right, cool.
Guys.
So what I kind of promised there is, like, people wanted to ask tons of questions, and we didn't have time. So I'm going to shut up. What I'm going to let you do is y'all ask the questions you want. So there's a microphone back there, and it's live. So if y'all want to go ahead and line up back there, if you have questions, you can speak into the microphone. Or if anyone just wants to move up a bunch of rows, we can all just have a conversation. You might not even use the microphone. He's already on it, so I'm going to let him kick it off.
Hey guys, Greg, I just wanted to know, what was your actual inspiration when Scott maybe like gave you the storyline for like Death of the Family? What was your inspiration to make it as gritty as just like, yeah, I mean, gross, but like gritty would actually be a great word for it.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you have to tailor your art to whatever the storyline is, and Scott wrote a gritty story, and, you know, Tony Daniel had cut the Joker's face off, and so we had to figure out how we're going to, you know, handle that. And so Scott goes, maybe it could be attached with, like, buckles and straps and hooks and stuff and real wide smile and, you know. And so, you know, I did some sketches and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's a cool one. And then so I thought to myself, I said, you know, well, it's been on, the face has been on ice at the Gotham Police Department. So I go, now that it's off ice, we all know what happens to meat when it's left out to rot, right? So I go, so let's make it like constantly decay. And so I talked to the FCO, my colorist, and I said, you know, start to make it look, you know, just nasty, like rotted meat. And then it occurred to me, well, where does rotted meat attract? Flies. It attracts flies. And so as the story progressed, I kept adding flies buzzing around the Joker. So, I mean, the things just kind of happen organically, you know what I mean, as we go. And so then once Scott starts to see, this is how we work. You'll see how it just comes together sort of organically. So then when Scott sees the flies, he starts to write those flies into the story. And so then we got to the end of the story, and where you see Ha on the computer screen in the Batcave, and Scott wanted to do something. He said, you know, this needs just something more to give it a little bit of oomph. And so, you know, we thought about it, and I thought, I know, I'll put a fly on the screen. And so that kind of makes you wonder, was the Joker really in the Batcave? And so, and he's like, that's brilliant. So this is how it sort of happens. You know, it starts with a germ, and then as we start to go, it sort of takes on a life of its own, you know, and we both just play off each other in that way. You know?
I like it better when it said it started with my seed.
You said a germ.
So, I like being a seed.
So, yeah, it's just, that's how it happened. So, and then Scott, you know, it's this dark place while he's writing, and he calls me up or talks to me, and says whatever he did, and he apologizes. I'm so sorry for bringing you to this dark place. I know it's really, really hard. And I'm going, this is awesome. I've been spawned for like 80 inches. This is like comfortable slippers. I time of my life, it didn't bother me at all. So, no. So, yeah, that's how it was.
You can jump up or you can walk back there, whatever you're comfortable doing.
All right.
Question for all three of you. What's the book you've always wanted to work on?
What is the what?
A book you've always wanted to work on.
Oh, that's a good one. Ezra, right?
Yes. There's so many. I mean, there are DC books I want to do. I'd really like to do a run on Wonder Woman. I have this idea for a take on her where she has kind of a base underneath the Smithsonian and all kinds of magical weapons from all different cultures. And she's become the protector of, like, everything magical and mystical in the DCU.
Are you going to spoil the story before we leave the story?
Yeah, it's basically like, it's like Captain America meets Hellboy is the way I like to think about it. But with her, she's got all kinds of cool invisible vehicles, invisible motorcycles and stuff, which make her invisible too. It's not like she's riding an invisible motorcycle. I don't know what would be the point of that.
Well, that'll be easy to draw.
Yeah, exactly. Or just word balloons, just going by.
That's right.
So that, I mean, there are a lot of stuff at DC, but also I think, I have a bunch of ideas of characters I'd really like to do at Marvel. I'd love to do a run on the Hulk. I have an idea for a story. The two of us would do well. It's very horror driven, big action. It's called Hulk Smash Everything. So it'd be really good. A Wolverine one and a Captain America one. And then I have another idea that's Captain America, Wolverine, and Ghost Rider all together. On motorcycles, solving cases over the years that you didn't know they worked on, and it's like a trio, and they all—I really like that one a lot. So there's a lot, yeah. I mean, I really feel like, and not to the other thing I'd say is that, you know, these guys are my partners for life. Like we're just, and I really feel like the best phase of our career is just about to start, where we've done a lot at DC. We still have other opportunities at DC for big stuff, small stuff, but I want to do stuff that we own together as well. And I want to do stuff, you know, that challenges us. The thing that I think attracts me to these guys always above other creators too. And the thing that attracts me to all the creators I work with really is the fact that they're always hungry and want to surprise themselves, and challenge themselves to do things that make them their own favorite creator at that time. You know what I mean? So that's
You know, I do Wonder Woman. As a matter of fact, Dave and Theo tried to talk me into doing Wonder Woman. Here's how it went. I wanted to do Swamp Thing because I got to do a couple pages Swamp Thing within Metal, and it's just fun. Who doesn't like monsters? So I was like, I told Dave the deal. I want to do Swamp Thing, right? So he goes, well, we're about to do it. Love comes in, okay? And so we go out to dinner, and he goes, I know you want to do Swamp Thing, and if you want that, I'll make it happen, but I really would love for you to do Wonder Woman. And so we've had that conversation about doing a Wonder Woman book. And so then he goes, I'll let you do some, I don't have a Swamp Thing book, but if you do some covers, I'll make a book around your Swamp Thing. And I turned in the first cover, and he goes, I need you to do me a Swamp Thing book. So, you know, so I'd like to do both those. I'd like to do Wonder Woman, and I would like to do some Swamp Thing. And as far as Marvel, I grew up a Marvel guy, so I would that character, of course, that character, sure. I would like to do them all. I just, sorry to be saying, I need to pay the bills. But I love Marvel characters. And like he said, we want to create a lot of things. I mean, creating Reborn Mark Miller was a great thing, especially for my family because we sold it to Netflix. So if we can, you know, do some more of that, you know, hey, who doesn't like money? So, pretty much anything. Man, I'm happy to do what I'm doing in general. So I can't even pick a favorite of the books I've done so far. I'm just happy to be doing
whatever they do.
is there a character that you really... You're like, oh, I'd love to do this character someday or no?
Well, I mean, what I'd like to do.
Sure.
What would that be?
Let alone engines, Spider-Man. Let alone lines to ink.
See this? You see what a weakling?
Yeah, Swamp Thing's awesome. Marvel wise,
Punisher would be cool.
Yeah, I like Punisher.
You guys, thank you.
Or I agree.
Obviously,
good.
I agree.
I'll tell you something about Wonder Woman real quick, though. You know, to me, when I took over Batman, it was the most intimidating thing I'd done because he's so popular worldwide. It doesn't matter if you're Marvel fans, it doesn't matter. Everybody just goes, yeah, Batman. And so, you know, that was a bit stressful because, you know, Batman fans are so radical, string you up and murder you if you do it right. So, but the second most intimidating character for me was Wonder Woman. I had a lot of stress over drawing Wonder Woman, and it's because, you know, in the 90s, all the girls were, you know, with the arch back, and, you know, Stanley clad and all. It was just like a formula that was, you know, employed back then. But Wonder Woman is such an important character. She has to have all the strength and character of a Superman or a Batman. You know, she has to have that kind of stature about her. Yet she still has to be beautiful and feminine and sexy at the same time without sexualizing. Make sense? And so that's a real... fine balancing act when you're trying to create her look. And I remember doing a lot of different sketches and showing them to my wife to get a female's perspective on what I was trying to do. And my wife, once my wife, when I felt strong and she said, yeah, that's great Wonder Woman, then I sheepishly started to draw it into our books. And then as I got going, I got comfortable with her and I got a feel for her. Now I'd like to do a Wonder Woman book. I think I understand how to approach her. But that's the second most intimidating character I've ever touched.
You remember when it was great?
Well, you know, I put a lot of thought into how to approach that character. And you know, women are as crazy as the Batman fans. They'll string me up and kill me. That'd be pretty humiliating. So,
Was Endgame the first time you drew
Wonder Woman? What's that now?
Was Endgame the first time you drew Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
It was. Yeah.
It was great. But there was more pressure as I had to do more of her, you know? So, yeah, a lot of thought went into her.
Now I'm thinking Punisher.
Right? You 5-minute pitch right off.
The thing, this week we actually have Batman Who Laughs, The Grim Knight, coming out for us. It's Eduardo Risso drew it. I'm really proud of it. But it imagines what would happen if Batman, as a kid, when he was when his parents are killed in the alley, if Joe Chill dropped the gun as he was running away, and then Bruce Wayne picks it up and shoots him. And from that moment forward, he's Batman, the lethal force Batman, so he's entirely like the Punisher. The thing that really interested me was not, though, the guns and knives and all the kind of weapons he uses to brutally kill everybody in the book. Yeah, well, the fun thing is he starts weaponizing all of Gotham. So, like, he's a multi, you know, Punisher is great, but Punisher's also usually kind of broke. You know what I mean? He drives around in a van. Like, Bruce Wayne is like a multi-billion-dollar industrialist. So, if he wants to kill you, your car, he has stuff in your GPS, your car just goes off the road, you die, you don't even know it was him. Or, you know, you're in an apartment building, Wayne air conditioning, just gas comes through, you're dead. Like, and you didn't know it was him. So, the scary thing to me is he's literally, like, the most lethal, you know, Dark Knight we've ever done, and then Jim Gordon is his big enemy in the issue with Dunning's world. That's kind of, I have an idea, I don't know, I haven't been keeping up with Punisher too much beyond, I love what Matt's doing with him now, Matt's a good friend, Matt Rosenberg, and what Becky did with him. I love Becky, obviously, he's a great friend too, Becky Cloonan, but I would like to give him that kind of ability. Like, I'd like to see what he would do with a lot of money.
So the opening scene is to play in the lottery.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Hit the numbers!
Exactly.
You do a miracle error. Start with Wilson.
Billions of dollars.
Well, just like what, because the guns, I get it, you know, and you know, I understand the iconic Punisher, but I just think, what is his bigger mission? You know what I mean? And what if he had the ability to manipulate all of New York that way? You know what I mean? So he could always make sure nobody is a bad guy. That's interesting. Cool, right? That's my pitch, Joe.
Yes, sir. You can just stand up and say it. That's my question, man.
It's a lot easier to stand up right here.
So, project.
Okay. So first of all, sign me up for that Wonder Woman comic. I got you to sign that Justice League Dark because your Wonder Woman's amazing.
Oh,
but I'd love that.
I appreciate that.
But really quick, out of the Dark Batman that came out of the Metal series, which one is your favorite? And if it's the Batman Who Laughs, what's your second favorite?
Well, Batman Who Laughs is my favorite mostly because the whole idea of the Dark Multiverse is what your greatest fears and hopes are exist there. And so to create something... For me, he is the final villain in that Joker was really fun to write, and I love Joker. He's the scariest villain possible, and he's pure evil. I don't write him crazy, I write him evil. But he, in his mind, thinks that he's also testing Batman. He believes that they belong together in the way that his job is to be the court jester to the Batcave, and the jester's role is to serve the king. So even though he does horrifying things and tries to kill Batman and kill people around Gotham, in his mind, he's doing it to make Batman better at being Batman, even if they're horrifying. That always was a limitation in some way as well, because there's a kind of camaraderie or a kind of, I'm doing this to prove a point. The thing that's scary to me about the Batman Who Laughs is he isn't trying to prove anything to anybody. He's just the apex predator. He's just Batman, evil. Batman planned for everything, and all he does is look around like a shark and say, what's a threat? Well, I have 100, if you see him, he's already has 100 ways to kill you, and he's thought up before you caught
him. Describe my mother.
That's why I like him so much. It, you know, my second favorite out of all of them, I love Red Death. I think he's a lot of fun. I want to bring, he's going to be coming back soon. But also, The Grim Knight. I really enjoy writing his character because he's also sympathetic. He's, you know, he's super dark and lethal, but he really believes that if he weaponizes all of Gotham, he can stop, you know. And there are no villains on his world because he killed them. Like, there's no Joker. He he killed him when he was the Red Hood. And there's something sympathetic to his vision, even though he's wrong.
I would agree about, you know, Batman and Flash. I mean, who doesn't want that character, right? He's just a cool character. He's really cool.
great design.
But you know, it's like, you know, I created all these visuals, so it's hard to pick one that I like. I mean, I like big characters, so that's one. But Red Death is cool looking, so he's fun to draw. Mine comes from a perspective of what I think looks cool and would be fun to draw. You know what I mean? So he gets into the psychology of it, and I just don't think that looks cool. And so our criteria is a little bit different how we judge what we like in that way. So maybe Red Death. No?
Thanks, you guys are great.
I appreciate it. More questions?
Yes,
sir.
This question is for Greg. Your early work on Spawn, did it influence any of the things you did in Dark Knight Metal?
Well, I wouldn't say that Spawn influenced anything that I did in Metal. Here's sort of me. I studied to make myself a strong draftsman. Okay, so I learned anatomy and clothing, like all the things that make you good draftsman, so you could work on something other than comics. You know, advertising, whatever, illustrations, that sort of thing. And so why my style seems to look different and evolve depending on where I am is because I don't treat the comics or stories, even individual stories, as I just put my style over everything. You know what I mean? I try and somehow tailor my drawings to the story so that it fits. And the extreme example I give, especially back when I was on Spawn and everything was, you know, so gritty and dark, tons of detail. You know, what if they hired me to do Barbie? Or My Little Pony, right? And my style is dark and gritty, and I obviously can't draw that in that world. And so I try and get the vibe of the story, and maybe this needs more grit, maybe this needs more detail, maybe this needs less detail, maybe this needs more open. So if you saw shadows of that, my Spawn work, it's because I maybe felt some of those vibes in the Metal work. So I really just try and go on my instinct of what I feel over the story itself, and that's how I work.
I'm thinking
about my little
pony.
Punisher pony.
Exactly, right? Friendship is not forever.
So, just kind of piggybacking on that, speaking about style, and maybe you know, because maybe the publisher can talk to you soon, but I'm wondering, do you know why, or what do you think was the pitch that you guys did back in New 52? Or even maybe
what was
going in comics before that?
You mean like what was going through their head when they put us together? You mean,
yeah, I think so. What do you think was your unique advantage in approaching this character who's so sick? Because, I mean,
I am clueless as to what Val Harris saw that he goes, these two guys.
I feel like at one time we're going to sit him down and get a few drinks from him, and he's going to be like, I don't know, like it's going to be something. They always act like they wanted to do this or that. It was always a matter of circumstance where they'll be like, we need to put this person on a big book of this person. They're probably going to hate each other you know, it's not like some brilliant move. But
Dan DiDio had never even heard of me. He didn't even know who I was. It was Jim Lee who called me up, you know, because I put my feelers out to both Marvel and DC when I decided I want to go back to mainstream. And Jim was like, I need somebody to jump into the trenches with me, you know, and I go, yeah, I'm talking to Todd. Trying to vote the warrior and Greg, you know, just play his warrior side. He'll join you, you know. And then it was like, yes, blood, yes, jumping into the trenches, you know. And so I go, I'm with Jim. And but Bob Harris then had this somehow this mastermind plan. And so Dan DiDio obviously had nothing to do. He'd known me from the whole time. And so I don't know what he saw. I mean, I worked together with Bob on X-Force back in the Marvel days, so he knew me from that. And but I didn't know Scott, so I don't know what he saw. Maybe because Scott had a poor influence, and I spent so long to stay on Spawn. I have no clue. It's not like a boy band where they go, "Hey, both guys, you know, you sing and dance." So I have no idea. No, can't answer.
I mean, I think part of it is that I can understand the math of it on paper at that time. Like, I was coming off Detective, and I was. A rising star writer, but I still wasn't extremely well known. And my brand, or what I was coming from, my kind of style, the work I had done so far had been with more Vertigo-based artists. So it was with Doc, with Francesco, and with Madison. So I had a bit of like an indie vibe about me still. And I think they wanted to throw me in and say, he can work with somebody who's a big superstar, who's also, you know, a big superhero, bombast, you know, action, all that kind of stuff that evokes the high stakes, grandeur of comics, not just, you know, I love Jock and I love Francesco and everything. I would, like, Jock is perfect for dark psychological gritty stuff, but when I have to do giant action, mind-blowing, cosmic, he's not who I would think of for that right off the bat. Not because he's bad at it, it's just not his favorite thing, you know? So I think I can understand that idea, you know what I mean? Where it's like, well, this guy, we need to see if he can work with somebody who doesn't just do the kind of indie stuff that he does, and you have the cred and the kind of muscle to come on the book and make it attract all the kind of, you know, classic superhero fans.
Well, he made a good call. You guys really have been supporting us for 10 years now.
Yeah.
It's been a long, since 2011. You guys have been supporting the two of us.
Yeah.
And so thank you for that. I mean, because we sit down and we talk, you know, why do you think they like us so much? And, you know, he has his ideas. I just go, I'm just thankful. I don't know why they like us, but thank you. And I like to say, you know, Gilligan's Island is probably a few years too young for that. But I'm not trying to get off Gilligan's Island. As long as you guys love us, I'm going to stay and eat those bananas and everything else until I die. Okay, when you stop liking me, I'll try and build a boat and talk to the professor.
But also I think, too, the chemistry between us, I mean, these guys are family. Like, we talk, whether we're working on stuff or not.
I'm not helping raise a baby.
We're doing May. Thank you. We were saying yesterday, and I know people over here at the VIP panel heard, but it was funny because I was showing him the sonogram, and it kind of looks like him
as a muscle
baby. Yeah, it was like, yeah, so it was sort of like that.
But to make this really a funny story, and just young kids in the room, but I'm not too bad. But I dreamt, and I'll phrase it properly too, so that I really take the curse off.
You had a romantic dream.
Yes, an intimate dream with Scott's wife, which was horrifying. Not horrifying, but very attractive.
Thank you.
I told it to my wife because I'm so loyal to my wife that if I have a dream like that, I confess like I'm guilty. Honey, I'm really sorry, but last night I dreamt this. You know, and so we're out together, and she tells Jeannie. I'm like, oh my God, you told Jeannie. And I can't believe you told her.
She thought it was funny.
No, she thought it was awesome. But anyway. And so, and it gets to him, and I'm like, this is familiar. I would want to know if Scott had that dream. And so when he sees the sonogram, and I go, and we were talking how it looked like a mustache. I said, maybe it wasn't a dream.
I said, when the baby's born, I'm going to draw a little bit. But I honestly think the chemistry between us is, aside from the fact that we became such good friends, you know, as creative partners, I really feel like ultimately we put the story before our egos always. And that's what I saw in immediately when we did Owls, even when we weren't getting along at first because I was scared. We told the story yesterday, but, you know, I was basically, I only knew how to work full script, and Greg's from more sort of a looser Marvel style, and I couldn't really adapt, so we weren't getting along, but the thing that made it click for me was as soon as I saw how devoted he was to story, and how immediately all ego, all sense of self kind of dissolved into making the best story. And that's what we try that over and over, you know, everything we do.
Storyteller.
Yeah, and look at, I would say, like, the thing that amazes me about your art always is when you be quiet.
That's my favorite stuff.
When he does a scene that's just Alfred and Bruce talking, you know, and last night, what we're doing now, Black Labels, a bunch of that kind of stuff. And I'm looking at this, and it's intensely intimate. There's nothing superhero about it. And it's the anatomy, it's the acting, it's the expressiveness, it's the emotionality. That stuff is so wildly not what you're known for, you know, as that kind of thing, but you're unparalleled with that, and it shows how you disappear into the story. At the moment, you know, some people, some superstar artists, you were great, still draw characters like Fred and Fight, even when they're talking about, like, some quiet
thing. Alfred, did you bring the buttermilk? I did.
yeah, like Grimace, you know? So that's what I love, too. I just think, we have similar priorities about when we do a story, it's never about how can I shine. How can I
no, because like, it'd be like the 90s mentality, and things make a lot of splash pages, but it doesn't tell the story the way that so, yeah, it's not ego. It's not how can I make money off of these pages afterwards. It's how can I make this be a really beautiful story where people can sense the characters through their body language and all that and feel and be immersed in the story. And the longer I'm on a book, the more familiar I get with the characters. And that makes it even easier because, like I like to say, you know, I start off with my intentions on that character. But as I move on and draw more and more issues, the characters start to tell me how to draw them. Like, I go, no, Alfred's drawn drawn this way, and he'll go, no, I'm drawn this way, and I'll go this body language. No, this is not how I stand like this, look at my hand goes. So the more intimate I become, they tell me how to draw them. I'm just listening to what they're telling me to do. It's not my command, it's them. So, yeah, that's one of the joys of drawing. It's magical. That's how it works for me. I don't know if it works for everybody like that, but for me, that's how it goes.
It's the same with writing. Writing is the same. You know, I think even your
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You guys said you'll work together forever. Can you talk a little bit about the Last Night on Earth?
Yeah, sure. So we're doing a book for Black Label at DC called Last Night Batman, Last Night on Earth. It starts in May, and it's going to be, all their books are bi-monthly, so it'll be like May, July, September. And each book is about 48 pages long. They're bigger. They have like chapter breaks and, you know, extra material and stuff, but the story itself, 8 pages. And it really is it's our Batman 25 years in the future. So it's a story, basically, when I was really freaking out about being on Batman when we first started, I was completely overwhelmed by the, you know, paralyzed, scariest thing I've ever heard. I happened to bump into Grant Morrison at San Diego Comic Con, and he was very kind. He's been like a very great mentor. He said, the way that you get over this is to give your version of the character of birth and death. And so, you know, you own your birth. And so 0 Year was me working through what I wanted our Batman to build at. And, you know, it makes him brave in the face of my kids are worried about versus what I was worried about, the one, you know, I went spoke to this so well. So this is the story that I started coming up with around the same time. I've been talking about it in 1 or 5 weeks. And it brings our Batman full circle. It's sort of the death for the death, but it's the final chapter of the kind of saga that began, so our mythology and the characters of the countries and that stuff. So the premise, it starts with Batman young. He's, you know, in his 20s, he's like Batman as he is now. And he's on a case where it's really simple. It's like somebody has drawn a chalk line 20 feet long every day for the last year somewhere in Gotham. But when he looks at satellite photos, it's actually like a chalk outline of a dead body of Batman that crosses the whole city. And part of that drawing is right at Crime Alley, where his parents were killed, so somebody knows who he is and all this. So he goes there, and under a lamppost, he finds a dead, he thinks this young boy's alive, and he raises the umbrella, he's dead, and the boy's arm comes up with a gun, and shoots him. And then suddenly he wakes up, and he's in Arkham. It's fun, right? So he wakes up, and he's in Arkham, and he's strapped to a bed, and he's young, you know, he's Bruce Wayne, 20, whatever years old, and they're like, thank God, his doctor comes in, and he's like, thank God, somebody finally broke through you, this new medicine returned, you know, penetrated this illusion you've been in for the last 10 years. Ever since you killed your parents in that alley, you've been here. And, you know, he doesn't believe it, and, you know, he starts screaming. And then they bring in Alfred, and Alfred corroborates it and says, no, this is where you've been. And they send him back to his padded cell. And he goes, and he's, like, feeling around the padded cell to escape. He knows it must be a trick. And he finds a little tear, and he finds a penny in a toy store. Yeah, so that's, and then it doesn't, like, that's only the first, it's only the first, like, 15 pages that take place in the setting. It gets crazy where he's traveling across the DCU, and he's got the Joker's head, and all this, it's every character in the DCU in different ways brought in. It's really almost like to me, it's a story about how these superheroes always need to, even when we don't want them anymore, or we cast them off, or we show that we're the worst versions of ourselves instead of the best, they still believe in us, and they find a way to be reborn as you know, still classic, but in new ways that make them exactly who we need. I'm really proud of it, and the work they're doing on it is just out. It's easily the best stuff, I think. Greg and John, and, you know, it's a great thing. The last thing I'll say about it is that we've never had the chance to build something without the grunt. Like, you know, everything that we've done for DC, that was my one thing I said to them when we did this, was like, I'm just excited to not be on the, oh my God, this has to hold up the entire line, or it has to be an event that makes every book sell 10 times better, and it's due every month. If you don't hit that deadline, that pressure, I love Batman, I love metal, but that pressure, it's a lot you take on. The whole company, I mean, the quarter rides on how you do sometimes with metal. And that means a lot of jobs, a lot of stores, a lot of fans, a lot of all of it. And this book we're able to do in such a way where we can make it in a vacuum and take our time, and we don't have the same pressures. And I love it because we're building it for us and for you without that same kind of, it must come out right now, I mean, you know, that. And I think it's our best stuff. So I love it.
It also gives me, unfortunately, more time to be compulsive. You know, so it's like I'll draw somebody with their head tilted like this, and I go, oh, no, that's not it. Okay, that's a little bit better. No, that's not it. Okay, now put the shoulder up. No, the other shoulder. Okay, now this. Perfect. So, you know, now it's just like, because I can be a mental patient. So, but that may be why it's even better, right? Because now I can get more.
It looks amazing.
neurotic about
this. Is it a different landscape? Like, when he breaks out, without any spoiler, make right? When he breaks out of the Oakley Art Shop, what happened? You said it, he travels across the DCU. Is it a different landscape than what we've seen?
Yeah, we're taking him through all kinds of travel. Yeah, there's going to be lots of different states that he's in, and they're all exciting and different. And so there's a lot of contrast between the scenes. So he's taken us through all kinds of worlds. So.
Yeah, you see what happens to a lot of characters. Everybody, you know, Green Lanterns and stuff.
It really is all over the place. It's a journey. Is what it is.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Oh,
that's a great question.
I guess take a more serious approach and slightly enraged. But I think the biggest thing, because that's not here. I think the biggest thing would have been, how do I say it? Let me say how it was. When I was in high school, I thought I was way better than I actually was. And you don't realize that you're as bad as you are. And I said this yesterday, and I say it all the time. And this applies to life in general. You have a mountain, okay? Now, the person who's up there, he has a great vantage point. He's the whole horizon. But when you're at the base, you don't have the same perspective. You don't have that horizon. And so you go, wow, I'm great, because you're way down here and you don't have any idea how bad you are. And so the idea, as you climb up and you start to see more, you realize where you're standing. So I would say the best thing is to accept critiques from people who have a high vantage and to let your ego not be there. Because I wasted, like, for instance, 2 years not accepting advice that was given me that would have propelled me all the sooner if I had just had some humility and gone, maybe this person knows what they're talking about more than I do. And so I would say get very smart people who you trust that are in positions of success and have them give an assessment of the work and take it very seriously and to listen to the advice that they're given. And I think that's the thing I would have told my younger self. You know, when Larry Hama told you this, maybe you should have went out and got that book he told you to get instead of stubbornly thinking you were better than he thought you. So that's what I would personally tell you.
Yeah, I would echo that. I think the other thing is, for me, it was learning to treat it like a job really early on, where there's so much romance around it, like, oh, I wait for inspiration, or, you know, for writing. There's that sense of, you know, you
hard
do
to
it.
That too.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you wait until you have something you really want to say. For me, it was a hard lesson of, you know, when we were broke and I was under deadline for things, or I was in school even, learning that you just have to do it every day. You have to treat it like it's the thing that
like
you're
punching a clock.
Yeah, it's a real job, and it will suck. Like, there are plenty of days where I feel like, you know, to this day, to me, writer's block is just the fear of writing something bad and seeing the hate what you wrote that day, which happens all the time. You know, when you get over it, you understand, oh, I had a bad day, but maybe something great will come of it tomorrow. Doesn't matter. But it's saying, I will get up at 6 in the morning, even if I'm teaching high school or I'm, you know, all the different odd jobs that I work. I will stay up late until one, I will put in my time to 3, 4, whatever hours it is, right? To prove to myself that this is my job. And like Greg said, a lot of it along the way was just taking every opportunity to try and get better at it and learn from any book that, you know, was recommended. Well, trying to take extra classes a lot over the summer and got the job for it. So it was always about just treating it like a profession, you know what I mean, and not romanticizing it. Because it is, we were saying yesterday, like, Stephen King had that great quote where it's sort of like, talent is the common table salt, you know, it's the hard place. And I really believe that. I don't think I had enough talent as a kid. I wasn't the best writer, but I was the kid that was like, okay, I'm gonna, instead of going to, you know, movies or whatever, I'm gonna sit home and read on writing, whatever, and, you know, how to draw comics the normal way, all that stuff is over. So it's just early on minimizing the odds you'll fail at it by trying to do everything you can to be like, this is my job. And in terms of just if you're past that stage and you're at the point where you're ready to make stuff, it's a different world than when we were coming up, where I think you could pitch to Marvel and DC directly. Nowadays, the means to make your own things are so available. So you can find an artist at a con like this. That's the whole, you know, purpose of, like, an Artist Alley, really. Or on DeviantArt, or on Twitter, you know, Pencil Jack, any of that stuff. Oh, right, if it's an artist looking for a writer.
You can find the teammates that you need.
Yeah, and what nowadays with your resume is, when you go to Marvel or DC, is the comics that you make independent. So they don't look for pitching ideas about their characters. It's almost like, the way I like to think about it, it's like you going to a professional sports team and saying, oh, I have this great play, but you have to let me quarterback, you have to let me, you know, point guard. And they'll just be like, who are you? Give us the play, let us know. So it's much more about you showing them that you can complete something that you're really proud of on your own as your resume. So if that's where you are,
when I tell people who show me their work, it's easy. Well, good luck. You know, and certainly there's an element of luck in every single area of your life. Right? I could have been born in the rainforest with this talent, and no one would know the difference, right? So I have the over that can bring us success. You need a little bit of luck sometimes, as always, in every area of life, I believe that. But you can ensure that you've done everything by working really, really hard. And so no matter what craft it is, learn everything that you can about that particular area, drawing, writing, calling, whatever it is. Seek out as much knowledge that you know more than the next person knows. Be hungrier than the next person is. Be more persistent than the other person may be. And that's the only thing I can tell you will increase your odds of meeting with success. Yep.
And no, also, not to keep, now I'm like, yeah, it's like we're down the hole. But I was saying yesterday, too, it was funny listening to different stories about how we broke in. You know, and I've heard so many over the years by so many creators, because it's one of the favorite questions of panels, artists, writers, makers, colorists. And the common denominator, other than the fact that these people all have worked hard, talking about it, drive, is that they all faced a moment, many moments, at least one defining, they were being told, this isn't going to work, you know, or you can't review yourself with yourself. And you're just looking out at a bleak landscape and understand that getting into it, there are those moments, and then everybody goes through the thing that every creator has in common to make it. They've gone through those times. So use it as something that makes you feel part of the group. Feel like, oh, if I can do this, or somebody saying you're not good enough, whatever it is, we all can.
This doesn't just apply to creators.
Yeah.
It can apply to anybody in this room, because all of us encounter people who tell you can't do that, you fail, and you know what people do? They put their limitations and self-doubt on you. And so it doesn't matter ever for you to listen to those people, okay? Because I was even told at one point from a pastor when I was getting rejected letters from Marvel, Greg, I don't think it's God's will. And I said, well, it's my will, and I'm going to get into comics. And so I didn't care who told me I couldn't, right? I was headstrong and I was determined. So it doesn't matter what you're trying to do in your life. If you hear somebody say, oh, you can't do that. No, well, no, you can't do that. Watch it. And just set out and prove wrong. So persistence, hard work, determination.
I remember like my low point when I was doing short stories before I broke in. I wrote this story that I really loved and I was sure it was the best thing I had done. And I was like, this is the one. And I sent it out to like, you know, hundreds of places, whatever, self-addressed in. Rejected by everybody, but the one magazine I really thought I could have a chance at, rejected it, warm letter, you know, whatever, and I was like, oh, sorry, well, back to the drawing. And then 2 weeks later, I got another rejection from the same magazine for the same story. They had paid for an envelope and a stamp, and which is, like, I'd never seen that. Put another form letter in and signed it, so it was like, just in case you didn't get it. And I swear to God, 2 weeks later, I got a third rejection, this time stamped envelope from them, handwritten, telling me, like, thank you, but it was the same form letter words. So I was like, somebody took the time to handwrite the form letter thing and stamp it and pay for all of the postage. And I'm like, I get it. I saw it. I understand. Like, message received. Yeah, sure. What he was saying was that there's been some controversy around Black Label as an imprint, which is a mature reader's imprint that DC's doing through the my buddy, editor Vertigo, Mark Doyle, mostly because of a book called Batman Damned that Brian Azzarello and Lee Romano were doing. It's a beautiful book. But because Batman appeared naked in it, it caused like a giant stir.
It's not really a mature book. They're just saying it's a mature book.
It was, what I think is that, that there's no, like, we're doing our book with Black Label. There's no truth to it falling apart or any of that stuff. But I think the point of that line, which they can communicate maybe better, is that it's meant to be a place where creators can go and do stories that take our characters places that you wouldn't expect in terms of, like, what we're doing with Last Night. And that story was getting lost, and I hate this about that controversy, you know. That book actually is really daring and gorgeous, you know, on the page. And I think the fact that Batman walks by naked at one point is a shame as a distraction, you know. And I think they made a choice there where they were trying to make him seem vulnerable and human. And that was the idea behind that page, I know, because I know them. And if they miscalculated and it became kind of a big storm and that stuff, and, you know, they take responsibility for that. But the thing I would try and point out
is the only thing that's allowable is a man's nipple.
What I leave you with about it is that that line is designed to give creators freedom to do stories that are really special to them. And the last thing that anybody would use that space to do is create something that was meant to be sensational or, you know, salacious or raunchy or whatever, just to grab people to get them to come see a book. None of that was like some cash grab or some ridiculous
controversy being meant to inspire. It really is like a special place for us to get to go and do stories that we can't do elsewhere. So it's a shame that it became what it is, but in terms of the health of that line, as far as I understand, I mean, we're full steam ahead with that and all of it. And I love the people that work there, so I have my hopes for it. Under doing Superman Year One is coming out in, maybe I shouldn't say, but I mean, Superman Year One and with Frank Miller and John Romita, that's the first book of that comes out in summer. And so does White Knight, is on Black Label as well. Sean Murphy's great book, The Curse of the White Knight, that comes out in, I think it's July. And all that's Black Label. So there's a lot of help to that one.
Awesome. Well, that's about all the time we have.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But thank you guys so much. They are going to be at a booth almost straight out this door if you want to go see them, get autographs, etc.
Yeah, and I was told that I was leaving straight from here to go to the airport, but my flight actually is later than they thought, so I'm going to go sign too. So I'll be over there as well, even though I wasn't listening.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks. Guys, thank you so much for coming.